Chelsea.
Hello.
Hi, Chelsea. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
So, my pleasure.
Cool. Well, if you're ready, let's get right down to it. We'll start with your year of graduation, also if it was spring or winter, and your major.
It was actually a summer of 2013. I finished in August, and I was a music production and engineering major with a minor in psychology.
Oh, cool. And what was your primary instrument?
Piano.
Nice. And let's start about your current job. What are you doing now?
I am a manager at a Spanish tapas restaurant in downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Cool. How big?
What do you want to know about it?
sure. About how big?
It's about 250 seats. We actually take up three individual addresses that we knocked the walls out and combined the spaces. It's over three floors, and we have a patio in the spring and summer and part of the fall, so I get my workout.
Wow. So how many hours a week do you typically work?
I work 5 days a week, about 50 hours, sometimes more, but I have some work that I can do at home, which is nice.
Nice. And when you say manager, can you describe what that job entails? In other words, are you kind of in a back office behind a desk? Are you out at on the floor, et cetera?
Both. Mostly on the floor, though. I do have some administrative stuff. I do the schedule every week for about 50 people. I'm in charge of training and scheduling the training and keeping the materials up to date. So some of it is office stuff, but most of it is on the floor. So, like, in the dining room, talking to guests, working with my hosts, working with my servers, support staff, and communicating with the kitchen. And basically, in a nutshell, my job is to make sure that every dining period, every service goes smoothly.
Okay, and about how many people are working there at any given moment?
We probably have 70 employees total. So on the busiest days, maybe 20 to 30 of those are working.
Okay.
Like maybe more over the course of the day. We have different shifts. We're open for lunch during the week and brunch on the weekends, and then dinner 7 nights a week. So there's always a rotating door of people coming in throughout the day.
Understood. Are you the only manager? Are you one of several managers? Because it sounds like the place. Go on.
Yeah, it's a big place. It'd be a lot just on my own. Know that we have a general manager, and then I'm one of three floor managers. So we have four front of house managers, and then we have our head chef and our sous chef in the back of house.
Okay. Well, it's almost like its own real company.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have a sister restaurant and a marketplace that's also part of the company. The company as a whole has about 600 employees. We're just one part of it.
Wow. Okay, so, and what do you enjoy about your job?
I really love the people I work with. I get to lead and be part of a team that is full of diverse people. You know, I have single moms, I have college students, I have people who've studied all different kinds of things and come from different places around Michigan and around the country. So working with them is a lot of fun. You know, they're very much my friends as well as my employees, which is fun. It makes it really nice to work with them. And I also love that I'm on my feet a lot. I don't sit behind a desk for 40 hours a week, which I've done in the past. I've done that on some internships, and it was absolutely miserable. So I like that I'm up and running around. And I also love that I get to deal with people a lot. You know, I had a great conversation with a couple of guys last night who wanted to know all about restaurant jargon and what we can say and what we don't and how we phrase you know, unfortunate situations to people. So I get to meet a lot of really great people and have cool conversations and, you know, talk about things and meet people who I otherwise wouldn't have.
Very cool. If I could just ask you, Michigan, is that where you're from initially?
No, I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and then moved to Boston for Berkeley. And then I ended up in Michigan with my boyfriend, who's an anesthesia resident at the University of Michigan Hospital.
Ah, understood. Okay, so if it's cool, speaking of Berkeley, let's take it back to the summer of 2013, as you are looking, you know, about to graduate or graduated.
Yeah.
Did you have a job lined up, or what were you thinking your career path would be at that moment?
Well, no, I didn't have a job lined up, per se. I've been working in a restaurant, actually Trident Cafe. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
I was working on Newberry. I was working at the Trident. I was just part-time my last semester, which was great. I did 4 years of school in three, and last semester was part-time, so that was fun. I got to do some great electives. But I decided that I wanted to stay in Boston. I considered moving to LA or New York, but the finances weren't there, and then I also didn't have any job opportunities lined up, and I'm not really a let's just move there and see what happens kind of person. I need a plan. So I decided to stay in Boston. I had a great living situation set up in Somerville, and I was able to pay all my bills, and I could afford rent and everything I needed. So that seemed like a good plan. I reached out and got a couple of internships. So I was working at Mix One Studios and then Aircraft Music Library.
Were those paid internships or unpaid internships?
They were unpaid.
Gotcha.
Which is one of the reasons I had to quit them both 4 months later. I left Trident and started working at Clio and Uni on the corner of Comm Ave and Mass Ave in October, I think.
Okay. Another restaurant.
I got a little burnt out at the Trident. It was just sheer volume was a lot of what that place was about. Mm-hmm.
Into an old manager. Maybe you said at the Trident you were a server?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So I'd ran into an old manager, and he was now the general manager at Clio and Uni in the LA Hotel, and he said he was looking for a host. And I wasn't very happy at the Trident, so I decided that I would just go and be his host and see where that led. Because both of the internships, like I said, were unpaid, so I had to make money somehow. Mm-hmm. In February of 2014, I had to quit both of the internships because they were unpaid. I was working about 60 hours a week, and 20 of them were paid, and I couldn't do it anymore. My student loans were about to come due, and I had to make more money.
Understood. And tell me, in terms of being a host, how is the getting acclimated into that role? Was it pretty easy, or was it, given that you'd been serving, or was there a lot of stuff you had to learn?
Oh, yeah. No, my first restaurant job I actually got when I was 18, my first semester at Berkeley. It's not there anymore. I think they redid it, but it's a place called Union Bar and Grill. It was in the South End. And it was great. I started as a busser. I had no restaurant experience, but I started as a busser. And then my boss realized that I was good at puzzles, so he trained me to be a host. So I did that, and then they trained me to serve brunch, and because I didn't need to know a ton about alcohol, which was great, because I wasn't legal to drink yet and hadn't learned that much about it. I could do mimosa, Bloody Mary, what kind of vodka, that was about all I needed to know. Uh-huh. So I was there for almost 2 years, which was great. So Trident was not my first restaurant job. So when I moved to Clio, it was actually with the manager from that first job who taught me so much about how to properly bus a table and how to, sell things to people and, how to work in a restaurant. So going to Clio was pretty easy as far as what the job entailed, because I'd done it already. It was just, hosting, which wasn't a big deal to me.
Do you mind sharing, was it much of a salary bump to become a host relative to a server, or was it pretty comparable?
I think it was actually probably salary decrease. The hosts don't make as much as they're worth, ever, I've found.
Understood.
Hosting is it's a difficult position that really gets overlooked. People really take it for granted, I think, especially if you've never done it. But a good host controls the night at the restaurant. You control the seating, you control who gets seated when, you control which guests get seated where. You have to be in constant communication with the servers to know how they're doing. If they have a particularly demanding table, then I can't give that person two more tables on top of that. you have to reallocate and reorganize. I also had to coordinate with two chefs. You know, there's Cleo and Uni. They had daily menu changes, so I did all of that. And on top of it, you have to look nice and smile and be nice to people. So no, hosts do not get paid enough. Okay. But the chef at Uni, we did these late night ramen things on Friday and Saturday.
Okay.
It was a very different clientele than the normal, during normal dinner service. It was, one, it was late night, two, it was ramen. It was way cheaper than what we served, you know, during regular service. So it drew a different crowd, and you had to be quick. You had to really move and get the tables bussed, get them reset, get the next people sat down. So the chef, so I was hosting during these times, and the chef at Uni, recognize that I have this kind of, this really great hustle. Like, I can move quickly and I understand the importance of urgency. So he said, "Hey, I want you to train to serve here." And I said, "Okay." So I started training to serve just one night a week. And this guy, his name is Tony Messina, and I have so much respect for him, but I was never more scared to go into work on a regular basis in my life. he's ex-military, ex-police. And now he's just a kick-ass sashimi chef at Uni, and they recently expanded and now have sushi and nigiri and maki, I think, and have taken over the Cleo space, and he's the head chef. So he's had some great success in the last few months, which is wonderful.
That's good. By the way, that's spelled U-N-I.
U-N-I, yeah.
Perfect. Go on.
But he took me under his wing in his own way, and kind of, he really taught me how to be a great server and how to describe things and the importance of accurately presenting what was in the food. Because Uni is very, they would do tasting menus and lots of weird food, right? It's food that we don't see, you know, on a regular basis, especially in America. But we'd get fish from Japan in 18 hours. It was really impressive. So I learned all these Japanese names for these different kinds of fish. I learned to identify the different fish by looking at the, you know, the raw cuts, and he really taught me how great it is, or how cool food is. Like, I love eating, I love trying new stuff. So he taught me about all these different kinds of food, but I also saw his dedication to what is really his craft, and every dish was just a piece of art. And his Instagram is amazing. It's just picture after picture of completely different dishes that are all edible. I mean, it's edible art. So I really appreciated that, and I appreciated how much control he had over his menu and over the dining experience and what he expected of his staff and what he wanted for the guests. So doing that and learning so much about food from him, and also working as the host in two really nice restaurants, you know, I kind of started to think, maybe I should just do this. And so my roommate came to work with me one night. We were really, really short staffed. I said, "You're the only person smart enough to do this. Please come work with me." So she saw me work, and she said, "Chelsea, you're really good at this, and you seem to really enjoy it. So just do this. Whatever you decide to do, just work in restaurants for now." So when I moved to Ann Arbor, I really took that to heart, and I looked into music options here, but it's not New York, it's not LA, it's not even Nashville. There's not a lot going on here. So I do teach piano lessons. I teach a little girl every week.
And by the way, just review, when did you move to Ann Arbor then?
It was the end of June 2014.
Okay, and so you were at UDI/Cleo up until then?
Yes.
Gotcha. You said you moved because your boyfriend is in medical school there, a medical intern?
He's a resident, so he's done with med school. He's an anesthesia resident at the University of Michigan.
Got it. So you move. So he's like, "I'm going there." You're like, "I'm going with you." And yeah, there you are.
And there I am. So I moved here, and I was studying for the LSAT at the time, too. I thought maybe I want to go to law school and do music law. I took a couple of classes at Berkeley that I really liked. I had a professor, Valerie Lovely, who was very sweet and offered a lot of guidance. So studying for the LSAT and exploring music options, exploring restaurant options, and kind of serendipitously fell into this job at Aventura, and I've been there ever since.
All right. I'd love if you could quantify the fell into this job. How exactly did you end up getting the job?
Well, I was actually getting a little depressed. I'd been here about a month and was just studying and applying for jobs every day and going to the gym. And then I would cook dinner for my boyfriend and me, because I didn't have a job. It was the first time probably since I was in kindergarten that I didn't have stuff to do on a regular basis. So I was going a little stir crazy. So I said, Ben, I need a date. We need to go on a date. So I looked up this place. It was called Sava's. They had a mushroom spaghettini dish and a Pinot Noir from Burgundy, which is my favorite kind of wine. And I said, I want to go here. I want this for dinner. So we went. And the place was just, it was absolutely beautiful. The food was great, and I loved the wine. It paired so well. But there was an attention to detail at this restaurant that was so obvious to me. And it was warm, and our server was just such a sweetheart. She was pre-med. She was talking to my boyfriend. So I started to ask her some questions. How long have you been here? Oh, about 2 years. I thought, well, that's a good sign, especially for a college student. And so I asked her if they were hiring, and she said, yeah, do you want to serve? I said, no, you know what? I want to manage. She said, oh, okay, well, I'll get my manager. So they were apparently pretty desperate for people. So he came right over and said, come in Monday morning, ask for Jess, have an interview. I said, okay, thanks. So I came in that Monday. I met with Jess, had a great interview. That's something I've always interviewed well, which is good. I'm a strong interviewer.
Any tips there?
Well, confidence is one. You have to go in. I had to go in knowing what my strengths were, knowing that what I had done at Clio and Uni had definitely prepared me to be a manager. I wasn't being told what to do by a bunch of different people, especially in the host role. I was very autonomous. My managers weren't telling me what to do with the floor plan and where to put people. I was telling them, please go seek these people here. And they did it. So I knew that I could do it. It was kind of my belief in myself. I also kind of credit it to AP English classes that I took in high school, where you have to learn how to mix stuff up really quickly and make it sound good. Because on these tests, you have to do these timed writing examples. And they give you a prompt, and sometimes it's completely ridiculous thing about some poem that you don't even understand. But you have half an hour to write an essay about it, and you don't have time to waste. You have to think of something. It has to be good. So which translates to interviewing for me, because people ask you questions and you have to answer them, and you have to sound like an intelligent person. So the interview went well. And so I had a follow-up interview with the director of operations. And she said, based on your experience, I think you'd be a really good fit at Aventura, which is our sister restaurant. It's Spanish. It's tapas style with your interest in wine. I think you'd be a really good fit there. So I checked that place out, interviewed with their GM, and they really needed people. They've been all working.
So that's a nice thing of a change. So you tried for the job at one place, but because they're part of a network, they said, go over here instead.
Yeah, that was definitely a perk. And I went in, and the Banquettes, it's an absolutely gorgeous restaurant. I definitely encourage you to look it up and just look at the pictures. It's a beautiful place to go to work every day.
Give me the name if it wants more.
It's Aventura, Aventura. It means adventure in Spanish.
And it's in Ann Arbor.
Yes.
Which is where the University of Michigan is, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Cool. Go on.
So I went in, and the banquettes are this deep purple color, and then all the high stools and the chairs have a dark green backing to them. And green and purple are my two favorite colors. So I walked in and thought, oh, dear, I really like this place. So we had the food, and the food was amazing. Our server was wonderful. He's still there, and I've told him since that he was a big factor in why I decided to eventually come on board there. Because I thought, wow, if they have such a good server and so much level of detail. And he didn't know who I was. He didn't know that I was, considering a job offer or was interested in working there. They didn't tell him on purpose, I think. But he was wonderful, and we had such a great time. And I just decided I really liked it. So they offered me the job, and I said I'd take it. One key thing I think that happened for me is I asked all my managers back in Boston to look over my resume before I left. And my GM at the time said, don't put host, don't put hostess, put functional floor manager. I thought, oh, that's pretty good. And he said, well, because you are. Think about what you do. And it's exactly what I said, where I was in charge of running the floor for two restaurants, not just one, and albeit small, but still two restaurants and two different sets of guests every night, and controlling the flow and controlling who gets sat when and which people get which tables, and accommodating regulars and accommodating people with crazy requests, and doing it all with a smile and composure.
Right. So you framed what you were doing the right way to make you said you look like a very good fit for the job you're in.
Right.
At the same time, that is it. I just want to make sure everyone picks up on what you just said, that I see you'd left Boston with no hard feelings. Obviously, anyone mm-hmm. could understand your boyfriend's move to do his medical thing, and you're going with him.
Yeah.
But that's really brilliant. What you did is spoke with your old bosses and people you work with. What's going to make you look good?
Oh, absolutely. And that was huge. One, because they're flat out older than me and have more experience. So they saw things in my resume that I didn't. And then also because my GM said put functional floor manager, I knew he was backing me up so that when whatever job I applied for called for references, he would say, oh yeah, she was a host, but she basically ran the floor. And then the GM at Aventura said, you know, that's actually functional floor manager. I'd never thought of it like that, but that's one reason we really wanted to talk to you. So that was huge.
Great. Yeah. And so you said you've been there for, if I get the math right, a little under 2 years?
Yeah, it'll be 2 years this summer.
Cool. Is this the sort of position you said floor manager?
Mm-hmm.
Is your position, do you have any ambitions? What comes next after floor manager?
Probably general managing, which is kind of the next step up. Which I definitely like to do. I know that we have expansion plans. There are plans to expand, I guess, sometime in probably the next 2 or 3 years. So I'm interested in taking on that responsibility, and I think I'd be a good general manager. But I'd also maybe like to own my own place sometime. My boyfriend and I were in San Diego recently, where he's from, and we had this great idea for kind of a fast casual place that would go really well in a college town like Ann Arbor. So, you know, maybe considering opening my own place, but I get to get some experience opening a restaurant first. So that's probably a few years down the road. But I also just applied for a part-time MBA program at the Ross School of Business here at the University of Michigan. So I'm actually waiting to hear back about that to see if I've been accepted or not.
Well, and would this be an MBA in restaurant management?
Not specifically restaurant management. I actually feel like maybe shouldn't study management because I have so much practical experience in it. I'd rather study entrepreneurship or investment or finance or something I don't know as much about, but I'm interested in.
Gotcha. Well, good for you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to the last part of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you mentioned that you give piano lessons on the side.
Yeah.
Cool, because I was going to ask you, what is your current relationship to music?
Definitely the piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
I bought myself a really nice Roland digital piano. I haven't had a nice piano in, you know, probably since I left home, so about 5 years. I have this beautiful baby grand Pramberger back in Colorado, but I'm not there, and it is, so I can't play it. Eventually, my parents actually have it in storage for me now. They sold our house, so whenever I get a more permanent home, we're going to get it to me somehow, but for right now, I've got the Roland, which is really great. You know, I play whenever I want, and I don't feel pressured to do anything specific with it, which is nice. I was never interested in performance, you know, even as a kid. I didn't like doing competitions. I just wanted to play, and I much preferred playing for my friends or playing at our Christmas party every year to going out and, you know, doing competitions. So that's kind of where I'm at with it, and I like doing that. I'd love to maybe teach more, you know, if my schedule allows, but I'm happy with, you know, my level of involvement with music.
Excellent. Good. Now, next question is, think back to your experience at Berklee, mm-hmm. which I'm sure, as you know, Berklee gives one degree, a Bachelor of Music degree.
Sure.
And perhaps many of us in hindsight could have studied the exact field we're doing now.
Right.
But relative to, you know, let's assume that one way or another you'd be a college graduate.
Right.
But relative to having gotten either a liberal arts degree somewhere or something, is there anything you feel like your Berklee education did particularly well to prepare you for your current job?
Well, the part of music production engineering that I really liked was actually the production side. I was less interested in the engineering. I was never a gearhead. People would go off, oh, did you see the blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not really interested. Because for me, if the singer couldn't sing, then it really didn't matter what kind of gear you had. You know, you needed to get a good person or a good band, or, you know, the skill had to be there, the raw talent. So I like the production part. Like our final semester in MP&E is to, they said, okay, you have, you need to pick an artist. You need to record 3 songs. You have 3 months. Go. Which was so much fun. I absolutely loved it. And I had such a great time. And I think, and there was so much practical experience. I mean, they put you in recording studios and said, okay, record stuff. And, you know, by doing that, you naturally encountered issues and you had to figure them out and you had to know what your resources were to figure them out. And you had to eventually turn in a product, you know, in whatever state it was in, but you had to turn it in for feedback. So that was huge, was the actual hands-on experience. It wasn't just technical and theoretical. It was very much applied. And producing, I think, really prepared me for restaurant management because there's so much there's so many different facets. I mean, when you're producing a record, it's one, who is my artist? Can I work with this person? So there's a people aspect. There's what is the music? We need to look at the creative aspect of this. We need to look at the technical aspects of the song. We need to woodshed it. We need to rehearse with the musicians. When are we going to record? How are we going to allocate our studio time? How much time do we have? What's our instrumentation going to look like? Working with the engineer, communicating my vision to the engineer, communicating my artist's vision to the engineer, communicating our visions to each other and making sure we're on the same page, getting the mix right. And then of course, you're dealing with all the issues that go along with it. Oh, my singer calls me 5 minutes before the session, can't sing today, what are we going to do instead? Or this piece of equipment that I really want to use just broke and we don't have an extra and we can't use it now, what are we going to use instead? So it was a lot of, and then just dealing with artists, dealing with musicians who, especially in college, are often such broken people still and are still figuring themselves out and are emotional sometimes and have real life stresses that they have to deal with and either use or put aside when they're in the studio. And I have to get them to do that. It was a lot of fun. I got to do so many different little things that all kind of tie into management. I mean,
Friday. When you describe it, I can totally see the parallels to your job.
Yeah, like Friday night at the restaurant is like conducting a really chaotic orchestra. Because I'm just trying to keep everything going, keep everything in harmony. It's logistics. Like, this table's been here for 4 hours and they won't get up, which means that someone else can't sit down. And now these people are upset because they don't have their table. And I have to figure out how to make them feel better. Well, now we just lost an oven, so now the paellas are going to take twice as long. We only have one oven instead of two, and this guest said something to this server, now the server's really upset, so let's make her feel better. So it's, it's all kinds of stuff going on. It's not just the same thing all the time, which is why I really like it. It keeps me on my toes, and it stays interesting. Awesome. So I think that hands-on experience at Berkeley is kind of what really prepared me for this.
Great.
Because I had to be in charge of stuff and people.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right, let's go for the flip side of this, mm-hmm. which is, again, you got a bachelor's of music degree. You came to Berkeley knowing that was the one degree offered.
Mm-hmm.
All that said, in the job you do now, is there anything where you look back at Berkeley and you say, you know, it would have been really useful to know this, and Berkeley could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
That's an interesting question. I don't feel like I wasn't taught anything that I should have been. I think my biggest kind of bone to pick with Berkeley and kind of the music industry as a whole is how really difficult it is to get started, especially for MP&E, as I found. One, that all of the internships are unpaid is just, it blows my mind. It's also, I think, illegal. There are very specific criteria for what an unpaid internship
is. Right. It's supposed to be where you're like, you're doing lots of learning and you're
right.
Not doing a regular job.
Right, like basically, you know, the intern cannot be really providing any kind of service of any kind to the company, and that's not what happens. And that's not just my evidence, that's, you know, from all my friends I've talked to as well. So one, that is the industry standard, and that Berkeley, whether, you know, directly or passively supports it, it allows it to happen and helps get people placed in these unpaid internships. And then also, just at least for the MP&E, the career that I saw happening and the reason I decided not to go for it was that I pictured myself moving to LA or New York and borderline starving because my parents weren't able to help me anymore. They said they could help me through school, which was fair, and after that I was on my own, which was fair. So, you know, New York or LA, working my tail off, probably at a restaurant part-time and working at a studio part-time, probably unpaid for X number of months. And so they decide, hey, we can pay you a little bit and you can be a paid minimum wage for X number of months. And then maybe you'll be an assistant engineer for X number of years until maybe someone dies and then you take their job. And that's kind of, but it was all for engineering though. You have to start as an engineer. And I understood the value of that, but it's just not what I wanted to do. And it's not what I wanted to devote, you know, a number of years to. I liked working with people and I liked being in charge of stuff. And I didn't want to be running around getting coffee when I knew I could do so much more. And I know so many of my friends can do so much more and have proved that they can do so much more. And have gone on to, you know, to try to work in studios, but then the studios closed down. You know, the music industry is not doing very well.
Right.
So I'm really proud of my friends who have done well and who found a way to be successful, but it wasn't for me. I didn't want that for myself. I was okay doing grunt work and being the low man on the totem pole, but it couldn't be for some indefinite amount of time, you know, doing something that I didn't really like.
Sure. That's a very fair answer.
Yeah.
All right. So another question I have for you is, sounds like you're in a great place. And by the way, I can hear how much you love your job when you just described what you were doing at the restaurant. It's not like you were such in the right place.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoy the little bit of stress. I don't thrive on stress. I don't love to create stress, but I do well when there's a little bit of something for me to fix. You know, I like that.
Great. So sounds like you found a great place.
Yeah.
There are a lot of recent Berkeley graduates who perhaps haven't found their place the way you have, and as well as perhaps students at Berkeley staring out into the big scary world.
It is scary.
Yeah, and to either or both of those groups, do you have any advice? Any stuff you'd like to tell them?
Well, the thing I had to realize was, well, one is that it is scary. My Susan Rogers, that professor for that final project I told you about, she said, you know, you're about to graduate and you've been in this fence for, you know, however many years you've been in school, and the fence has been getting bigger as you've got older, but all the fences are about to fall down and you're about to be in the big wide open world with all these choices. And it's kind of exciting because you can do anything you want, but it's also scary because you have to figure out what of anything you want to do. And some people, I think, really have a strong vision, and some people don't. And I don't think I totally did. And that was kind of scary. But, you know, I think I would tell people, if you feel like that, that's okay. And that's normal. You just have to keep going. Take it one day at a time and don't not do anything. You can't just stand still. You have to keep going. And then the other thing for me is that I had to figure out what I liked doing. Because, you know, when you're a little kid, people say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's always a job title. And the job title I said when I was a kid was not restaurant manager. You know, I wanted to be a plastic surgeon, which was, you know, not realistic. But I figured out, and I thought the same thing graduating college, like, what do I want to be? What do I want to do? And I realized that what I wanted to do was actually a skill set. It was actually a thing. And, you know, what I do could be put under a number of different titles. It just happens to be in restaurants. So, like, what I really like doing is working with people. And I knew that in college too. I like production as opposed to engineering. So I just had to find a job that I got where I got to do what I like to do, not necessarily be the right title. So that's where I had to figure that out and then be okay with it.
Okay. No, that's wonderful advice. I got one last question for you, which is just, is there, now's your time to be immortalized in a recording. Or you probably have been already. But
yeah, I was always on the other side of it. I was recording other people.
Well, do you feel there's anything we missed, or do you have anything else you'd like to say?
I think I'm still on the young side. I'm only 23 years old, and I still feel sometimes like I've failed sometimes. Because I'm not doing something in music. But what I have to keep going back to is the fact that, one, I am happy what I'm doing. I really enjoy what I'm doing, and I enjoy where I'm working, and that I made a decision not to pursue a career in music because it made sense for me at the time. So it's not like I haven't suddenly just figured everything out and everything's rosy and peaches and cream. It's still kind of a process for me, but I'm really, you know, I focus on the positive and I really try to enjoy it. And so far I am.
Good for you. I could mention my wife is works in software quality engineering.
Okay.
She is a very excellent software quality engineering job. She was an English major in college. And I was going to say, you know, she would never refer to herself as a failed English major.
Right. And that's what I have to remember myself. You know, I graduated summa cum laude. I did not fail by any means. I did really well in my classes. My professors liked me. I liked them. I learned so much. I had a great time. And I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't have go back and go to a different school. But I've had to really come to terms with the fact that I haven't failed just because I'm not doing what I set out to do originally at 18.
Understood. Great thoughts to keep in mind. Yeah. Well, hey, Chelsea, thanks for taking the time. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, it was great talking with you. Thank you.
And I look forward to hearing how things develop.
All right. Where does this go from here?
Where this goes from here?
Yeah. What do you do with the interviews?
Well, there's short-term and long-term, right? So can I give you both answers?
Sure, yeah.
Well, let's see. In the short term, it sits on my computer and in the cloud for probably 6 to 8 weeks because I keep a few interviews in the can before they get published.
Okay.
Then it goes up on my blog, which I believe I sent you the link to that, which has... Yeah, I think I sent it to you, right? It has about 11 other graduates at the moment.
I don't know if you did.
Really? I'll be sure to send it to you. I'll be sending you a message anyway.
Okay, please do.
And then sometime, usually a couple months after the interview goes up on my blog, the Berklee Career Development Center cleans the audio up a little bit and releases it as a podcast.
Oh, cool.
So it's like at the moment, there are 11 people on my blog, and there are, I think, 6 or 7 people on the podcast.
Okay.
And then, now, the other thing I do is I re-listen to the interview. That's sort of short term.
Okay.
And then, you know, I've heard there might be a couple other organizations at Berklee. Once there are enough things on the podcast, we'll be in contact with Alumni Affairs. We'll see if they start publicizing the interviews. Then... longer term, I do re-listen to all the interviews and make very careful notes about them, particularly how people got their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Although also what people have to say at Berklee, as you can imagine, when you've had 8 or 10 conversations, that's not enough to establish clear patterns.
Sure.
But, you know, I've been doing like these conversations basically 1 every 2 weeks. And the plan is that after, say, 1.5 or 2 years, mm-hmm. I'll have enough of these that we can really start seeing some patterns in terms of both, you know, what people thought about their Berklee education, areas perhaps we can do better and areas we should keep going.
Sure.
But also, let's find out what are the fruitful paths to getting a good career going.
Yeah.
And if, you know, half the people out there got the job because they made a random friend who hooked them up with something, well, then that's a good thing to know.
Right. And that, yeah, like I just happened to run into this old manager and he said, hey, you want a job? Yeah.
Right. Or you said your old first guy, you knew him. So.
Yeah.
You get the idea. Now, I've seen a good dispersal, but I'll be curious as time goes on to see, particularly because the people whom I'm studying, right, all you Berklee graduates who have not successful non-music careers, mm-hmm. by the way, an incredibly rich field to study.
I bet.
Because would you believe me if I told you that Berklee does a ton of examination on its graduates with music careers, but
yeah.
almost nothing on the rest? So there's like half of Berklee graduates and like there's almost nothing known.
I think that's fascinating.
So very, very, let's say, fertile ground, you know, new territory to be explored.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's wonderful.
That's the hope, is that we'll get some really useful, ultimately some useful data and conclusions. And don't forget also, as the podcast grows and the blog grows, we could start to be a real resource for students, right? Yeah. Now that you're up, you're my first restaurant floor manager. If a Berkeley person is saying, hey, I want to think about a career, hey, what about, you know, and they look at, you know, whatever, the future, the 50, the 100 people. I know, restaurant floor manager, I wonder what that's like. And now they can listen to your interview.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
So that's the plan. Look for a message from me on LinkedIn momentarily.
Okay.
And it was a pleasure talking with you.
You too, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Bye.